Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Dick Cheney was probably the most powerful and consequential vice president in American history. His legacy is enormous, but not in a positive sense. He and his fellow neocons rained death and destruction throughout the Middle East and curtailed civil liberties at home. Crosstalking the passing of Dick Cheney, I'm joined by my guest Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Kingston, we have Gerald Salenti. He is founder and director of the Trends Research Institute. And in Melbourne, we cross to Jeff Rich. He is a historian, former government official, as well as host of the Burning Archive YouTube channel. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first. I mean, Dick Cheney, as I said in my introduction, probably the most consequential vice president we ever had. But he was also a political figure that was with us during our entire awareness of politics. I mean, we go back to Gerald Ford's administration. He was chief of staff, very young person, but considered very competent, okay? And then the rest is history. So he was a good part of our lives. I wish he hadn't been, but he was. What were your first thoughts when he passed?
Well, I told someone that he died, and they said I didn't know he was still alive. So okay. That has a lot to do with it.
But Daniel, he was alive during the last election cycle. His daughter, you know, that was the last thing I remember of him, is that the Democratic Party rehabilitated him. It's remarkably. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, what it reminds us is how evil Washington is. Now, I wouldn't really necessarily, this may be controversial, I don't know that I would necessarily label him a neocon. I think he was more of a nihilist. Mm. He went to D.C., and he went to D.C. for two things, for money and power, and he did whatever it took to get them. He was not an East Coast ideologue. He wasn't an intellectual from the salons of New York and a Trotskyite like the neocons were. He was a different breed. He was a Westerner. He wore cowboy boots, and when he came to D.C., he saw it's a pretty damn good place to make money, and it's a pretty damn good place to get a lot of power, and that's what he did. And he didn't care who died in his wake. And in his wake, I think the Brown University Cost of War Project calculated that the post 9/11 wars killed 4.5 million people and displaced 38 million people. He didn't give a damn about that.
And he made a lot of money personally off of it as well. Gerald, what is his legacy? What is his impact? Because one could make the claim, and I will on this program, that Donald Trump is a descendant of the kind of ideology or worldview that Dick Cheney had. Go ahead, Gerald.
Well, first of all, as I used to say, I can't call him Dick Cheney. I have to be proper because I don't want to get blacklisted on the media. So I call him Penis Cheney, just to make it clear, I didn't call him Dick Cheney. He should rot in hell. Light us into the Afghan war, gave us the 9/11, changed the whole country. And again, look at the little clown boy that he was supporting, that he was behind. A little boy of nothing, little Georgie Bush. We're gonna get that guy Osama bin Laden dead or alive. Remember how all the people bought that? Look how the world changed after 9/11. When I was a young guy and I used to fly first class when I used to work for the corporations, it was fun to fly. No more. Now I got to feel you up and see what you got. And flying stinks. The whole world changed. What legacy? This clown boy is going to be forgotten. Most people don't even know who he is. Younger generations have no idea. He was nothing more, and Daniel made it really clear who he is. Just money and power. An arrogant little boy who only cared about himself. And another, was the Halliburton guy? Was he the Halliburton guy? Oh, yeah, you think we would have invaded Iraq if their major export was broccoli? Right in front of everybody's eyes, but nobody talks about it. What legacy? Who gives a damn? But wait,
I agree with you. We're talking about him as a person. I agree. But let me go to Jeff right now. But there is a real legacy. It's actually being played out in the GOP as we speak right now on what kind of Republican Party there should be, because there's still this belief that Trump is just an anomaly, a second term president that's an anomaly. I don't believe that. I look at this as part of Cheney was part of changing the DNA of American foreign policy. And it is stuck. It's in both parties right now. Jeff.
Well, I'd also bring attention to his role in 1991 in actively advocating the breakup of the Soviet Union and really effectively going against his own president's
That's true.
More cautious policy. And advocating, a military war, economic war against the Soviet Union to defeat it militarily as well. So, and if you think about the consequences of how he destroyed the prospect of a peace at the end of the Cold War, him personally, and there's a whole series of, that you can go through the archives and look at all the interventions he made in 1991 to sort of push towards, an aggressive policy towards the Soviet Union and to betray, the agreements between Gorbachev and Bush. That is an extraordinary legacy, because the world would have been an entirely different place if the Soviet Union had formed a peaceful, continued existence after 1991. And we hadn't had, the Second Cold War. So I think in some ways Dick Cheney's fundamental legacy is the Second Cold War that we've been living in since 1991.
And that's another history that is, because of 9/11 and the Patriot Act and all that, not as much attention is given there. But Daniel, to go back to kind of the legacy when it comes to policy here, it was normalized to have wars of choice. And we have that to this day. I mean, we're all watching what's going on with Venezuela. That was something new in the post-Cold War era. We're going to have wars of choice now. Daniel.
My first memory of Dick Cheney, sort of a personal way, it was in late 99 and early 2000. I was, believe it or not, I was working in a neocon think tank. I'd just gotten back from living overseas. And George W. Bush had just been elected, and Gerald accurately encapsulates what he was all about. But I remember I was banned from the conference room, and that's because all the top people like Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney were going into the conference room. I won't mention the name of the organization. People would know it. And they were looking through the plum book. And what they were doing is they were filling every position from the secretary to assistant secretary and way on down and down. These people understood power in a way that other administrations never did in Washington, D.C. They made sure everybody before January 20th in the inauguration, everybody was ready to hit the ground running. Everyone was on the same page and everybody was locked and loaded for war. And I watched it happen in real time there. And it was really an interesting and disgusting piece of history. But that was a hell of an introduction to how Washington, D.C. works for me. And it made a huge impression on me. This is the person, as I said before, you go back, the gentleman from Australia is absolutely correct at the end of the Cold War. But look at the 80s when he was behind the death squads, right-wing death squads in Central America. And he established the United States not as a friendly trading partner to Latin America, but as we learned from Confessions of an Economic Hitman, a big bully to go down there and break things and steal money. And he was intimately part of that as well. So literally every evil thing that we've seen in the last few decades has had Dick Cheney written on it.
That's right. And Gerald, if you go through the broadsheets, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, they'll only go as far as say, he was controversial. He was controversial, okay? But they're never going to talk about what we're talking about on this program. Gerald.
Well, that's because I call the media people, excuse me, I call them prostitutes. Media whores that get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and their government whoremasters. End of story. They don't come out and tell the truth anymore. There's no more journalism. Pick up the New York Times. They call themselves the paper record. I call them the toilet paper record. Big pictures now. Cover the whole page. on a Sunday, $5 an issue. There's no journalism. Big pictures now. Go back to the 1970s when there used to be copy on all the pages. Again, a few. What do they have? A little Bill Clinton. What he did, the Federal Communications Act, 1996.
Yep.
Deregulated the communications industry. Now you have six companies that control, they say, 92% of the media. Oh, what just happened? That guy, Ellison? Oh, they just bought CBS? Oh, yeah. My daddy gave me the money. I bought it. They put that guy, that Barry Weiss in there, that woman, that pro-Zionist woman. You think they're going to come out against the Israeli Gaza?
Gerald, check antiwar.com. The firing has started over there at CBS. If you have the wrong position, you are losing your job. And you know what? Getting good media jobs is really hard these days, okay? And many, many veterans over at CBS were you're reporting the wrong way. I absolutely agree. And this is what was completely predictable. Keep going, Gerald.
Again, you know, I used to be on everybody. I used to be on the Oprah, the Today Show, Good Morning America. I had best-selling books, Trends 2000, Trend Tracking, published a weekly magazine, The Trends Journal. I got blacklisted from everybody back in when the Afghan war started. USA Today used to be a big newspaper, and they used to report my top trends every year. And the one for 2001 was 2001 won't be our year, Trendseer says. And I warned that a wave of anti-Americanism was sweeping the globe and Americans wouldn't be safe at home or abroad. And then 9/11 happened. And they said, how come this happened? I said, look what Bill Clinton did. Listen, Madeleine Albright, 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five were killed. Leslie Stahl asks her on 60 Minutes. She said, was the price worth it? And Madeleine Albright said, yes, the price was worth it. I said, you know, we used to say in the Bronx, payback's a bitch. I said, there's no way America's going to win this war in Afghanistan. If Alexander the Great couldn't pull it off, if the British at the height of the British Empire couldn't pull it off, the Russians couldn't pull it off, what makes you think we'll pull it off? We haven't won a war since World War II.
Gerald, I have to, I'm facing...
Blacklisted.
You're not blacklisted here for sure. I'm facing a hard break. We're going to go to a quick break, and after that break, we'll continue our discussion on the passing of Dick Cheney. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the passing of Dick Cheney. Okay, let's go to the down under here in Melbourne. Jeff, do you see any of Dick Cheney and Donald Trump today?
In our media.
No, I mean, you look at the machinations that Cheney was involved, and then you look at the Trump foreign policy, first and second term. Is there a lineage? Is there a connection? Are there dots to be connected?
Well, I think Daniel? Yes, Daniel used the term nihilist, and Emmanuel Todd says the true nature of America today is nihilism and oligarchy. And I think those two characteristics are there for both Dick Cheney and Donald Trump. I don't think it's a direct descendants. And I personally find the term neoconservative a little bit confusing because I think there's not really a whole lot of ideas and ideology, etc., involved in these groups. It's often more the sense of status, the sense of resentment, the sense of supremacy and desire to project power out into the world. And it's the socialisation into being what, again, Emmanuel Todd describes as the Washington gang that I think is the common characteristic between Trump, Cheney, Rubio, Vance, the whole, Biden, Sullivan, Newland.
Yeah, none of these, I don't think the word virtue doesn't come to mind when you mention those names, okay?
No. I mean, I'm almost inclined to describe Dick Cheney as the sort of Eichmann of the American empire, the sort of banality of American evil. I mean, one of the striking things about him is just his ideas and his foreign policy concepts were so poor, really. I mean, if you think again about what he did in 1991, he didn't see the possibilities that James Baker and George Bush, et cetera, did see to actually come to terms with the Soviet Union. He just pursued this aggressive evangelizing, you know, communism's evil, they're all unreconstructed.
Well, but also, but also, you know, there, let me go to Daniel here. Israel plays a very important role in all of this. I mean, I agree with your opening comment. You wouldn't particularly label him as a neocon, but he had neocons around him. And I agree with Jeff. I wish there were a better term, but that's the best one we've got right now. It's like left and right today don't really make much sense anymore. But Daniel, what role did the protecting Israel's interests play for these people? Because it seems very dominant. I mean, going to war for a small foreign country, which happened repeatedly.
Well, it was very facile for them. They were devoted to Israel. I think probably Cheney ideologically not as much as the I would call the real neocons from New York, and they were Jewish and they were non-Jewish. They were Gentiles as well, but they were dedicated to that cause for a number of reasons. One of them being it gave them power, distinguished them from the other groups, and they did all of the wars at the behest of those who supported Israel above all, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, to a lesser degree, Syria, Libya, et cetera. And so you do see that. And I think that might be you're looking for a vein that ran through the early Cheney era until our era. That's the vein, really. And that's what's actually exploding in the United States right now. There's an absolute open civil war on the right, because particularly young Republicans, young conservatives have rejected the idea that conservative foreign policy should be based on our fealty to Israel. And that's causing an explosion. The old guard is going insane. You have Tucker Carlson, whose show was enormously popular, the most important and most widely watched commentator on the political scene. And he's interviewing people that you're not allowed to talk to.
Yep.
And he's having conversations and people that he does not agree with. He does not agree with Nick Fuentes. They've openly disagreed.
Well, Nick Fuentes
on so many things.
Insulted his own family, Tucker Carlson's family, but he pushed that aside and said, let's just talk about ideas. And Tucker's getting a lot of negative press for that. He didn't agree with everything that Nick Fuentes said. He just said, I'm going to give you a platform and let's talk. That's in the past right now. Gerald, you know, talking about the kind of rhetoric today, I mean, Lindsey Graham recently, I'm quoting him, we're killing all the right people. What kind of person talks like that? We're killing all the right people. This sounds like The Sopranos on steroids. Gerald.
You know, the Lindsey Graham has been saying this kind of crap for since he's been in there. And again, why would anybody listen to this little boy of nothing? He's just a little nobody. You know, and going back to what you were talking about with Israel and the changes going on and Tucker Carlson, you know, this election that just happened in New York City.
Yep.
This is historical.
Yep.
You know, I'm a New York City. I'm a Bronx guy. You know, that this guy won, a 34-year-old guy, and remember, this is New York City. This is the largest city in America. This has the largest Jewish population of any city outside of Israel, and this guy won. This is showing you, when you're talking about Cheney and the establishment and Lindsey Graham, how the people, particularly the younger people, are going in a whole different direction. Here, just listen to Trump on Monday or Sunday. This Mondani is a Jew hater. He hates Jews. And this guy won big time. And even if Sliwa and dropped out, he still would have won.
Still would have won.
This is very important, what just went on here. This is an historical move. And by the way, to put it into the global perspective, Kenya, Madagascar, Morocco, Nepal, Generation Z revolutions going on in all of these countries. Young people have no future. And that's what just happened in New York City. Every one of my Jewish friends supported Mondani.
Yeah, but if you look at the ads that the Cuomo people were running, I mean, no wonder Mondani won. I mean, just the absolute bottom feeding rhetoric that that Mondani's opposition had, it was just disgusting. It really turned people off. You know, Jeff, you know, again, looking at the broadsheets and looking at the obituary of Cheney, because I think he's emblematic of an era and of a policy, he's never held to account. None of these people are held to account. And I think that's what Gerald is getting into here, is a lot of people think you can do a lot of really bad things and you can make a whole lot of money in the process and you're never held to account. And we look at younger generations right now, their future is pretty bleak. Jeff.
Yeah, well, yeah, America's never really held to account for its actions, isn't it?
Yeah.
It has this sort of shield of impunity. And Cheney's involvement in Nicaragua, et cetera, was partly the instigation for America to leave the International Criminal Court way back then. So I'm a bit skeptical about whether Mamdani is really a revolutionary change. Oh, I mean, in some ways...
He's not a revolutionary. I mean, if you take his politics and compare it to European politics, he's like a conservative progressive. I mean, but Gerald's point is, and I think he'll agree with me here, is that this was a big middle finger to the establishment. That's what that was all about. I think a lot of independents voted for him, too, because they're sick and tired of the Cuomos and the Hillary Clintons and the Bidens and all of that. People are so sick and tired of it. And it's nothing to do with politics anymore. It's rage now. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Can I just ask, yeah. I mean, will it be like a Barack Obama where 2008, audacity of hope,
suddenly we know how that ended, realized
what America was with Dick Cheney all around the world.
Yep.
America's forgiven, and again, America's its saintly self again. So, and after all, you know, New York is a big city, but it is just the local government.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure if there's going to be all that much change there.
Daniel, is Trump a descendant of Dick Cheney when it comes to foreign policy? I'm thinking of the unprovoked attack on Iran, something that Dick Cheney wanted presidents to do. I mean, they never did, but Trump did it. The impending war against Venezuela, is there some DNA there that you can trace back?
Well, I think you can always trace some of it back, but I think Trump is more a person who's beholden to his donors. He literally told us this. He went to the Knesset and he said, hey, I get a lot of money from these people. They tell me what to do when I do it. What's the problem? You know, he's literally open about that. And that's what it's all about. Oh, they got a lot of oil in Venezuela. We're going to take the oil. We're going to take the oil in Iraq. That's what it's all about. You know, the thing, just if I can make one final comment about Dick Cheney that's interesting, is we can talk about Dick Cheney, the person. But what's important is what Dick Cheney tells us about ourselves and our own political system. Dick Cheney was Satan incarnate to the left throughout the George W. Bush term. He was... His name was dirt. It was mud. They hated his guts, right? But as soon as Dick Cheney turned against Donald Trump, he became rehabilitated by the left. The left embraced, not only did the left embrace Dick Cheney, the left started rehabilitating the Iraq war itself. Yeah. And I don't do this to pick on the left because the right does the same thing. It shows how deeply unserious the United States is.
Yes, and we had in the last presidential campaign, we had Liz Cheney tag teaming with Kamala Harris. I mean, if you don't call that rehabilitation, I don't know what you do. Okay, Gerald, we got 1 minute. Why don't you finish it off for us?
Well, again, you know, this election in New York City, it's what you said before. People are disgusted with the establishment system. They've had it. And it's not only in America, this is global. And that's what people have to understand. The rich have gotten richer. Oxfam just came out with a report. The 10 top billionaires in America got $400 billion richer over the last year. And then you look at all of the numbers coming out, how people are disgusted with the two-party system, how they don't, young people see no future. We are in a revolutionary time like I have never seen in my life before. This is very serious, but remember, when all else fails, they take you to war. They get the people's mind off it. So watch for watch for wars to increase, and the people will forget about the economic times.
Yeah, well, that's not good. Yeah, a war and revolution. I'm living in a country that's had both. And you know what, gentlemen? It doesn't work out well. Okay, at least for the people on the bottom. That's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Melbourne, Kingston, and in Lake Jackson. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.